Hi, everybody. I just want to say thank you for coming along this season and listening to The Trial of Lola Adams. I am so excited and continue to get excited about exploring these topics with you. So thank you so much for listening. I also want to give a special thank you to my boyfriend, Tony, for stepping up this episode and playing my victim, Kyle, when I didn't have one. So thank you, baby. On to the show. From Alice in Wonderland. In a wonderland they lie, dreaming as the days go by, dreaming as the summers die. 7 days passed between Kyle's return from Philadelphia and the day he was killed. On day one, he made a plea to his wife. On day two, he was reported. On day three, Lola received an email from her temple leader and applied for a handgun.
What happened on day four?
I went to temple and spent the whole day meditating. My duties were neglected, but everyone, including myself, felt that meditation was the most constructive thing I could do.
Did you meditate successfully?
No. Mine were interrupted. I was struggling with fear and pressure. I couldn't keep my thoughts away.
What sort of thoughts were you having?
I was thinking about Kyle leaving. And I was thinking about the things that could happen if the tapestry was ruptured that way.
Anything in particular?
I remember imagining a tsunami or a hurricane. And when I think of disasters like those, I'd envision children dying and mothers holding them. And oh God, it was horrific. These images would just fill my head.
Were you having thoughts of anything besides natural disasters?
I was plagued by thoughts of every type of disaster. I thought about serial killers, serial rapists preying on people, all those victims.
Did you think about your own fate?
No. That wasn't something I was concerned with. I didn't think about my or Kyle's fate. I was just thinking about the impending doom.
So your meditations were not peaceful during this time?
No. I was essentially sitting in a dark room, fighting compulsive visions of death and torment that were all my fault. It was anguish.
Where was Kyle?
Home. He was, I presume, getting his affairs in order to leave for good. And I know he was in contact with his family.
I was really relieved when Kyle called us. I'd had this fear that he would return to the temple and they'd get their hooks in him again, but that didn't happen. Every day he seemed more resolute than the day before.
How so?
He described it as seeing everything through a fresh lens. Once the veil had been pulled back, he noticed the corruption and controlling behaviors clearly.
Did he speak to you about his efforts to deprogram friends and family?
Yes. It was very upsetting for him. He'd expected people to know and trust what he had to say, but they didn't. They turned on him immediately. They reported him immediately. And that was very hurtful to Kyle. It also further strengthened his knowledge of how unshakable TCS beliefs were.
How many people did Kyle make overtures to?
Just two, Lola and Donna Peterson. Both conversations had gone so disappointing. Can you imagine? He took a risk to try and save them. He went back to that terrible place to save them, and what did they do? They betrayed him immediately, without a second's hesitation.
Are you saying Kyle knew about being reported?
Of course he knew. He knew that place better than they did. He knew the system better than they did. And that's when he finally realized how futile it all was.
I'm sure that was a difficult time.
It was devastating. He understood he'd done irreparable harm to these people by getting them in. And now he'd just, have to walk away?
Why?
Well, he couldn't stay there with them. TCS would never stop harassing him into coming back. And he couldn't risk being subjected to more of their mind control. He had to leave for self-preservation. He understood temple protocol well enough to anticipate what they'd do.
What was the state of Kyle's marriage at this time?
Upsetting. He was disturbed by Lola's behavior. She was angry and desperate, so Kyle feared for her well-being, and she was crying and shaking and not sleeping. He really did love her.
Was he afraid of her?
No, not at all.
Why didn't your brother return to Philadelphia immediately after being reported?
It was all for Lola. His conscience couldn't allow him to abandon her if she was still there. Or if there was still any hope.
So he had hope?
Yes, for her.
Why?
Because she gave him hope. She told him that she would consider leaving with him, but she was overwhelmed and needed time. He was sensitive to that.
How was Kyle filling his time during this week? I understand he wasn't going to work at the temple.
No, he wasn't going to work. He was glued to the internet every waking hour. We'd given him a laptop to bring to Gainesville, and he was on it all the time, reading articles about TCS, reading articles about Ty Byman, I know it was hard for him learning about all the ways in which he'd been duped for decades. But it was also liberating learning that he was on the right track now. Any lingering doubts he may have had in Philadelphia were gone. He was resolute.
He was so resolute. I was hoping that some time in the union's meditations would affect him, but they didn't. Days 4 and 5 passed in a blur. I hadn't slept. I wasn't eating. If I said one word to Kyle in support of the temple, his eyes would grow dark and he'd shut it down. If he said one word against the temple, I'd leave the room. And so we just stayed around each other in silence. We'd hold hands sometimes. At night, I'd cling to him because I couldn't stand the thought of being apart from him.
Do you mean the thought of him being dead?
No, I mean the thought of him leaving the group.
Let's be specific, Lola. Are you talking about the period after you applied for a handgun, during which time a background check was being completed, and at which time you were expecting to receive a gun shortly?
Yes.
And you were clinging to Kyle at night because you couldn't stand the thought of being without him?
Yes.
You did understand that if you shot Kyle, you'd be it without him.
I wasn't expecting it to come to that. I was holding on to faith that we could preserve the tapestry with Kyle. The gun was just an insurance policy. If the worst of the worst happened, if Kyle tried to completely destroy the tapestry, the union, I had to stop it.
Do you understand how it may seem incongruous to some people to both cling to someone while purchasing a gun?
Of course, but it's like if you loved a mass murderer and you knew they were plotting something, you would hope to stop them without violence, but what if you couldn't?
Prosecutor Jeffrey Rhodes.
I find it personally deplorable that Lola Adams would take this honorable stand in our court of law and compare her victim to a mass murderer. Does that sound remorseful? Does that sound respectful? Kyle Adams was not a mass murderer. He was an innocent man that she coldly and calculatedly gunned down. Do not allow yourself to be so manipulated as to reverse their roles. He was not a killer, and she is not a victim. Let's keep their roles straight. Miss Adams, on what day did you pick up your handgun from TG Sporting Goods?
Saturday.
Day 6?
Yes.
What did you do with it after picking it up at the store?
I drove home with it in the shopping bag, and then I put the gun in my sock drawer, and I recycled the bag.
Would you say you hid both the gun and the bag?
Yes, I did.
From whom did you hide these things?
From Kyle.
Lola, would you please walk us through what happened between you and Kyle that evening?
He got home a little after 5. I don't know where he'd been. I made dinner. It was pasta with grilled chicken and broccoli. We ate. Kyle washed the dishes.
Did you discuss the temple that evening?
Yes. He asked me to talk. I was reluctant, but I sat with him and he asked me what progress I'd made, whether I was ready to go to Philadelphia.
What did you say?
I said I needed more time. And that's when he told me that he'd book us flights for the following day.
What was your reaction?
I jumped up. I yelled at him. I asked him how he could do that. I wasn't ready. I demanded he cancel the tickets.
Did Kyle yell back?
No. He was calm. He just sat there watching me yell.
How did the argument end?
He told me, okay, that he'd cancel the flight and wait until I was ready.
Hi, everyone. With the holidays over and summer approaching, I'm trying to get back to all the right choices, especially when it comes to health. And I'm finding that all my healthy resolutions really center around what I put in my body. So this week, I was really excited to get to try the healthier, high-quality meal kit delivery service, Green Chef. Green Chef is a USDA-certified organic company that makes eating well easy and affordable. And they have plans that fit every kind of lifestyle and eating choice, every kind. Paleo, vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, Mediterranean, heart smart, lean and clean, keto, which is huge right now, gluten-free, and omnivore. All of the things. I can't even think of a base they haven't covered. I chose the vegan plan to try out with my boyfriend and his kids, which was especially great because he is so conscientious about what they eat. And I let Green Chef do the planning, grocery shopping, and most of the prep for these meals. The delivery arrived at my door filled with beautiful, clean ingredients that were pre-measured, perfectly portioned, mostly prepped, and just ready to go. Said boyfriend is a fantastic cook, and he doesn't measure things or follow recipes. He just glides through the kitchen and drives people like me insane. People who require hand-holding if we cook. And Green Chef was a really great hand-holder. The Green Chef recipes were quick and easy. They had step-by-step instructions, tips, and photos to help guide me along. They also had nutritional breakdowns, which I found really interesting and I appreciated a lot. My favorite dish, if I have to pick one, was Moroccan sweet potato with tahini sauce. It had quinoa with sautéed peppers and currants, red beet and carrot slaw, which makes me sound just so professional and dietarily knowledgeable, just saying. It was so good. If you want to be more conscientious about your eating choices, if you're pressed for time, if you have particular dietary preferences, or even if you just want to try some really great, fun, new recipes, you have to try Green Chef. I was honestly blown away by the wholesome, wide variety of organic ingredients that they have. It's so good, and I'm so excited because I get to offer you a great deal when you try it. For $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/deliberations. This is the one, you guys. When you try it, you'll see what I mean. So for $50 off your first box of Green Chef, just go to greenchef.us/deliberations. Deprogramming consultant, Anne Stiles.
Saturday afternoon, day 6, I had an appointment to speak with Kyle by phone. I encouraged him to do it in a neutral place in case TCS members had wired or booked his home.
Does that happen?
Of course. Destructive organizations live in fear of members deserting. That is when their secrets are exposed to the world. They go to great lengths to prevent that from happening.
Did Kyle keep his appointment with you that day?
Yes. He called me from a hotel lobby. He apparently informed the desk that he was a guest and they let him use the phone as a courtesy.
What did you two discuss?
We discussed his own revelations about TCS. through the research he conducted, insights about mind control and POW camps that he'd been researching. He was very motivated to discuss these things and receive my feedback. This zeal to get the truth is both common and healthy in newly deprogrammed individuals.
What else did you discuss?
We discussed Lola.
And what did you discuss about Lola?
At the onset of our conversation, Kyle felt hopeful that she was on her way to deprogramming, and that given time, she would come around. But the more we talked and the more questions I asked about her conduct, the more certain I felt that wasn't the case.
What made you draw that conclusion?
She was still meditating every day. She was still going to temple every day. She appeared to be as fully committed to her group as ever. Kyle shared with me her pleas for processing time in advance of leaving, but these seemed to me to be more like delaying tactics. Additionally, it seemed that she was making overtures for him to reconsider DCS doctrine, which I considered to be very dangerous for Kyle. As resolute as he was, it is simply not safe for a recently deprogrammed member to stay in close contact with his group. I encouraged him to leave.
Leave Gainesville?
Yes. Come home to Philadelphia, with or without Lola.
Was he reticent to leave Lola?
Yes, but I informed him that he could make as significant an impact on her deprogramming by leaving as he could by staying. Perhaps more so.
Did Kyle take your advice to heart?
He certainly seemed to.
The following day, Lola attended a TCS fundraiser at a local market. While working, she received the following voicemail.
Lola, hey, I really hope you get this voicemail in time. I'm leaving. I've packed your bags, and I didn't cancel your flight. It's not too late for you to come with me. But it has to be now. If you're here in the next 45 minutes, we can do this together. If you're not, you can reach me at my parents' house. I love you.
I can't believe what I did. Oh my God. Oh my God.
The state asked for a break, but Lola's lawyer pushed forward despite her discomposure.
What happened when he received the voicemail?
I lost it. I was frantic. I ran to my car and raced home. Kyle was there.
What happened then?
I told him not to go. I begged him not to go. It didn't matter. He was leaving.
What did you do, Lola?
I went to the bedroom and got the gun. I came back into the kitchen. He was taking his bags through the side door. I held the gun at him.
What did he say?
He seemed surprised, but still calm. He said, "You won't do that, Lola." And then he turned around and he went for the door.
And then?
I shot him. In the back. Twice. and he fell. And he didn't move.
What did you do?
I went to my bedroom. I put the gun down. I sat on the floor. I held my knees. I waited.
What were you waiting for?
I don't know.
When did you get up?
About 30 minutes later. I was in shock. Everything was so silent. My ears were ringing. It was so silent. I went into the kitchen and I saw Kyle in the pool of his blood. And I felt his neck. And there was no pulse. And he was cold. And I walked to the kitchen phone and dialed 911.
I'd like to say something, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, Campbell.
Thank you. I wonder if anybody else is having the same problem I am. I'm listening to all the evidence, but I'm also listening to Lola. And she's been talking and talking, and she's talking about her life in the, in, what is it, TCS? Mm-hmm. And she sounds wistful, like she loved it. It was a safe place. She doesn't sound like she's been deprogrammed. She doesn't sound regretful. She doesn't sound sorry. When she talked about killing her husband, that was the only time that I thought she felt sorry about what she had done. It seemed to me that she was still justifying it. When she was talking about why, about how she thought there would be horrible things happening in the world, it sounded like she still believed it.
Well,
and I'm having a problem with that, because if she doesn't regret what she does, if she doesn't feel like she's truly been deprogrammed, then do we feel sympathetic for her? Well, I mean, what do you feel?
I mean, you know, I think I understand where you're coming from, and I was really heartbroken actually during her testimony when she talked about, I mean, actually killing her husband.
Oh, but that was the only moment.
Right, but you know, and you kind of say that she's justifying her actions, right? And that,
yes,
she's trying to justify this whole thing. And you think back a little bit to social dissonance and, you know,
cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive, thank you. You know, and I think if any of us killed our lover, we would do everything we could in our capacity every single day to justify it in our brain. Because she has to, I mean, at the end of the day, she has to live with that. Whether she goes to jail or not, she, no matter what, I guess you could say, what punishment we invoke upon her, at the end of the day, she will never have Kyle again. She will never not have to live with that. And so I think she really is trying to justify why it could happen and why could she have done that. And I think, I mean, you know, it's hard to remember exactly what she was saying, but I mean, I did see some sort of kind of shift I felt personally from her when she kind of was talking about the days leading up to it. And then when she actually spoke about that day, I mean, it felt a little hard for her to talk about it. And what's kind of struck out to me, and I'd love to hear your guys' opinion as well too, is I thought it was beautiful. And I really use
beautiful.
That word with, not that she killed her, but listen, yeah, beautiful that they were holding hands even when they couldn't agree. Like, they were so, I mean, talk about being on complete opposites of the spectrum. Here's one person who's in the cult and the other person that's trying to pull them out of a cult. And they could not be, I mean, to me, it's like having a wife that supported for Trump and a husband that voted for Hillary. But at the end of the day, they're able to sit in their bed and hold hands.
It's unconditional.
I mean, that speaks volumes to me. Volumes. Something that is beyond human emotions and human thoughts. They are able to move past that.
I want to focus on that.
It's obvious that they loved each other.
Yes.
But I think you and Banks are very sympathetic, and you're speaking from your heart.
Always.
You're sympathetic towards Lola. You have been to the from the very beginning.
Right.
I don't think you're looking at her in a just detached way.
Oh, totally. I have looked at her in a detached way. And there's times when I've even felt
I think you're putting your own emotion too much into this.
I think
let me finish. Rather than looking at it in a detached way and seeing a woman whose husband was going to leave, who couldn't change things, who didn't want him to leave, who was desperate, and is justifying with everything she says what she did, but at the same time, the biggest emotion that I've felt throughout this whole trial when she testifies is a longing to be back part of the cult.
Where do you feel that she wants to be back part of the cult?
Because she speaks of it lovingly. She never once says,
She's recalling her experiences. And those experiences at that time were loving. Yeah. And they were exciting.
She has never once said, I know this was wrong. I see it differently now. Unfortunately, I felt this way. Unfortunately, I believe this. She has never once said anything negative about it, only talking about her euphoria.
I'm going to disagree with that. There's been plenty of different testimony. You shouldn't say she hasn't said certain things.
I didn't want to kill him.
Yeah. What we're focused on right now is the evidence that we're talking about. Right now, what we're focusing on right here, right? This aspect, the reason why what we're deliberating on right now is the testimony of her shooting her husband, and we're doing this for a very specific reason. We are trying to figure out what her mindset was, what her reasonable nature was, et cetera, and the motivation. I'm just going to point out one thing really quick. While she was talking about the murder and the days leading up, and yes, you know, the hand holding, I felt a little, you know, sympathy towards her, and it was loving and everything. No, I mean,
it's a heartstring.
Being a married guy, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But what I will say is, she didn't mention anything about, yeah, and I constantly told him the world was going to end, and I constantly told him the tapestry was going to fall apart, and I constantly told him of all the doom and gloom. She did not say that she said that to him.
Right.
At all.
I mean, to be fair, he should know that, though. He's been there for 20 years.
She said that when she tried to speak, if he tried to speak, she would leave the room. If she tried to speak, he shut her down.
He shut down. So, I mean, there wasn't a lot of conversation happening between the two of them. And one of the things that I keep getting drawn back to, and this is why, and Campbell, I know you think I lead a lot with emotion. And while I do, there is a lot of logic that I do bounce around. But there have been many times throughout this case where I've been like, wow, she sounds a little cold-hearted there.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to kind of think about the situation she's in, and she's not in a normal situation whatsoever. And her brain, whether you believe in cognitive dissonance or not, is really trying to make sense of everything that's happened, no matter what state she's in. But what I keep getting drawn back to is these insane, intense images she was having when she was meditating that day. When, you know, we're on, I think it was around day 4 or day 5, and she just kept trying to meditate for the answer. Because again, we're assuming, you know, she's in this cult and they meditate for their answers. And a lot of people meditate for answers in life. That's a normal thing.
Yeah.
You know, and she's meditating for answers. And the only thing that's being flashed in her mind is these dark images of not her getting hurt, not Kyle getting hurt, but of mothers holding their children in a tsunami, in hurricanes, in tornadoes, in these
and unreasonable
then
images.
Serial
these
rapists
these
and
unreasonable
serial,
images.
Oh, totally unreasonable. But she's feeling this totality and this weight crashing down on her. Her
Dude,
marriage is failing. This cult is on her. She feels like if she doesn't take action, that literally, because Ty has told her that, you know, Darfur has happened before and Obama got elected, you know, she is literally feeling like not only will she lose Kyle, She may lose the entire world because they've never seen someone of Kyle's stature leave the organization, and they have no idea what the ramifications of that could be. They have absolutely no clue.
Was she really feeling those things?
Yes, yeah, she was.
I think
in a sense of
or was
fear.
She feeling more the loss of Kyle? I know I keep
well,
going back.
Well, she hadn't
back
lost
to
Kyle.
She hadn't lost
at
Kyle
point.
At that point.
No, but she means if Kyle was to leave.
He was threatening to leave. She
but
was
she said she didn't even
him.
Think about Kyle. She was so focused on the ramifications of the bigger picture.
Oh, but she kept telling him that she wasn't ready. She was playing.
How can you actually? But I mean, how can you expect her to be ready in a day when she's already? I mean, and it's already. I think it's very unhealthy for Kyle to even go back into that situation.
7 days.
Van, what
seven
about you?
7 days.
Well, the marriage was definitely declining, and it accelerated when he got clear, when he realized the game is over in terms of TCS, taking advantage of him. Now, meditations are not, quote, interrupted. You are either focused in your thought.
I don't agree with that.
Well, I agree because after 45 years of meditating, I know the difference between focused and having your mind wander and worry about this and worry about, it could be worry about the rent, or you could be worry about mothers holding their babies. Meditations are not interrupted by something outside. That's
someone
your
can't
focus.
Walk into the room and break your meditation.
Did someone walk in her room?
We have no idea what external forces were in that room.
There were no external forces. This was all her mind. That's the point.
And she
exactly.
can't focus
if you
she's
can stop for
world.
Just a second, I will tell you why it wasn't an interruption.
Okay, hold on a second. You do, Shane. You are interrupting a little bit too much. Please, I've said this before, and clearly emotions are rising. So please let him finish, please.
An emotional interruption. Watch it.
Go ahead,
Ben.
So if we're going to evaluate the law, we can't do it strictly with emotion. It has to be through reason. So the meditations are not interrupted. These were her fantasies that she was creating in her mind that this was what would happen to the world, and she appointed herself as the one to stop him. She said that herself. She felt like she was the one who had to stop him. So she buys a gun. And she shoots him in the back. She shoots him twice, okay? This is not someone who loves their husband. She shoots him twice in the back. She doesn't call 911 right away. Mm. Why not?
Because she's in shock.
Because if 911 gets there, they can revive him before he dies. She waited 30 minutes for him to bleed out.
She's in shock. She has no idea what to do.
How was he? He was in shock.
He was dead.
Yeah. So she waited. She was so loving of him, she waited 30 minutes for him to bleed out.
Shane, specifically, you remember the testimony. Remember the testimony previously before when with the 911 call. She specifically said she waited to call.
Right.
Until he was dead. So, I mean, you agree with that. She did.
Right.
She admitted that. Those were her words.
Okay. No, I know, but she
waited 30 minutes.
Hang on a second. Shane, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, like, this is, I mean, we're acting like, again, like, we haven't reviewed all of these previous elements of the case before, but remember, we did talk about yesterday how that email played a lot of weight into her being influenced to buy a gun. It's like, what blows my mind is we just keep making really really great steps in this case, and then we come back and we mull over details that we've already mulled over and we've already all agreed upon.
But we haven't talked about the day that she shot him yet.
We talked about the fact that she was influenced by the email, and now Van's like, wow, she went and picked out a gun out of nowhere and da-da-da-da.
She went and picked out a gun out of nowhere.
Hey, wait.
She hit the gun, shot him in the back twice, and waited 30 minutes for him to bleed out.
If you need to go meditate for a couple of minutes, Please do that. I want to hear what Banks has to say.
So I want to go back to Van's point. He said that she was focusing on the images that she decided, you know, this thinking about the serial killers or rapists or, you know, all the victims and genocide. She didn't decide that was what was going to happen. She'd been taught that that was what would happen if somebody left the union. So these were things, of course, that was traumatic to her. She was in a state of fear. She used the word doom. She was physically shaking, crying, not sleeping. She was in a state of distress. She felt that she was, you know, had to make some kind of action to... She was so scared that all of these things were going to come true by the person that she was in love with leaving her. I think we can all agree that she was in a strange, heightened sense of doom and, you know, she was having physical sensations. To me, these all come back to her teachings, to the state of mind that she'd been put in for years.
But her exact words were, I couldn't stand the thought of being apart from him. She didn't say, I'm worried about the tapestry coming apart.
Exactly.
She said, I couldn't stand the thought. That's what we're focusing on, people, right now.
Because
we're focusing on this aspect of the trial.
But Lola, from her point of view, couldn't ever leave this union. She didn't have the choice to leave with him.
She didn't want to. It was a happy...
She can't leave.
Well, if she leaves, that's unraveling
the tapestry.
She knows
what happens.
That's
her
belief.
Darfur happened. That's what they believe.
Can we get back to
what
we're talking about?
There,
which
and
is
she
the
didn't
marriage.
Want her personal life.
No, she didn't. She wanted Kyle to stay because they had an amazing life there.
I'm sorry, Francis, what were you saying? Please.
Well, first of all, I think that a lot of people are confused as far as sympathy versus empathy. They're completely two different things. Sympathy is feeling sorry for somebody, which does absolutely nothing.
You've never experienced it, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's not a nice thing
However,
to say.
However, no,
that's sympathy. That's sympathy the condition is, of sympathy.
You're saying he hasn't experienced.
No.
I'm agreeing
that
with him.
That is the definition of sympathy.
No, that is the definition of sympathy.
Sorry.
Feeling sorry for somebody will not solve a problem. It will not do anything.
Right.
Empathy is not feeling about their pain. It's understanding the pain. It's putting words to the feeling in and of itself. So let's talk about the marriage in and of itself. Clearly, like what Shane was saying, was that there's a massive problem with lack of communication among the two in that marriage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. There's going to be problems. I'm sure that Alex has problems in his marriage sometimes.
No way.
The pit bull that you
When you're
are.
Always right, how could there be problems? Oh, gosh.
There you go.
He's perfect. Look at that hair.
Yeah. Hey. There you go. But think about it. Is she sympathetic? Sure. But that doesn't mean shit. Because it doesn't solve the problem. It doesn't solve the problem that she still shot her husband. So my point is, when I'm listening to the test, you disagree. I'm sorry.
No.
When you're going over the testimony that we're focused on right now.
Yeah.
Right. So when you go over
it's
the testimony, yeah. When you go over and listen to it, it doesn't matter the way that how she's feeling now, because that's not the point. The point is we need to focus on what she was feeling and thinking and doing then in the exact moment that
was
happening.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to establish, because I think people are kind of overlooking the evidence that says she was in a physical state of stress and an emotional state of stress.
Yeah, her husband was going to leave her, but I want to go back to that point. I think Francis, you're absolutely right. What we do need to focus on what she was at that particular time. The aspect of the trial that we're going over right now is her feelings in and around very near the time she shot her husband. She didn't say anything about the tapestry. That to me is disturbing. She said she couldn't stand the thought of him leaving her. That's why that's what's influencing me right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
In other words, if you leave me, I kill you. So you can't leave me.
Yeah. Was she more concerned about him leaving her or leaving the cult and destroying the tapestry?
Yes, she was worried about that.
So let me ask you this.
She tells us that.
After she shot him.
Yeah.
It would be a lot more convenient, I agree, if
she had the whole conversation with the entire cult before. They literally strategized.
Hmm. Right now we're talking about how she felt around the time that she shot her husband. That's the piece of the trial that we're going over right now, Shane.
Well, I understand.
That,
it always has a lot of backtracking.
She wanted help from the others to try and get him to stay.
I know you're frustrated about it because this case is frustrating.
I'm just frustrated because people admit to things and feel certain ways for her and then they backtrack on it.
But we're not.
We're just focusing
on this aspect right now. We're only focused on the days surrounding.
Right, totally.
That's all we're focusing on.
Well, and part of her convening with the group was in days 1 through 7.
She did mention the tapestry. I've remembered. She said she wanted to preserve the tapestry with him.
Yes.
But she didn't say that to him.
They didn't even communicate.
But they were. She said that he specifically came to her and said he wanted to talk to her.
Right.
About,
and remember how well that went.
Well, I mean, look, we weren't in the room. We only have her word for it because he's dead.
She told us that on day 5, she was holding on to her faith to preserve the tapestry. That's what she told us in this trial.
Yeah.
But remember, she's also been coached by her defense attorney.
Speaking of the attorneys, I had a problem with something that Rhodes said. I feel like he misinterpreted a piece of evidence that Lola said.
What do you mean?
Rhodes said that Lola compared Kyle to a mass murderer, and I don't think she was comparing him to a mass murderer. She was comparing her position
as the
TCS beliefs of upholding a tapestry.
Yeah.
And I think he misinterpreted that to suit his cause. And that troubled me because it made me feel like his argument wasn't strong enough.
Yeah. I think it would be the reason why he clarified that is because she specifically said, if you loved a mass murderer,
yeah.
that's why he clarified that. So I don't think he did necessarily, you know, misinterpret something. He wanted to clarify that. One of the things that the prosecutor is trying to do is make sure that we're not unduly influenced to think of Kyle as a bad person. Yeah. So they drop things like, if you loved a mass murderer, what would you do? We can't focus on that. We need to focus whether or not she reasonably believed she was going to suffer harm, or, you know, harm was going to occur. That's why I keep going back to the whole reasonableness of it. And the fact that she, in her mind, she said that, yeah, I'm still trying to preserve the tapestry. She should have been discussing that and hammering that home with Kyle. I'm sorry. If that was going to be her reason, she should have said, yeah, I constantly went at him. Every time he would talk to me, I kept bringing up the tapestry and I kept bringing up Darfur and I kept bringing... She should have told him about those images. She didn't say that. She said she had those images, but she didn't tell him about those images.
I agree. And I want to comment on one thing you said. You said that we misinterpreted a piece of evidence. What Lola told us about comparing it to a mass murder, that's hearsay. That's not
evidence. Well, it's her witness statement.
Let's not get into hearsay and evidence type stuff on that. She was something that was entered in. She wanted to bring up a question regarding Rhodes and what he said. I think that was a very fair thing, and I'm glad I explained that to you. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you for breaking it down for me.
Also, her fantasy that bad things would happen in the world if he left TCS is really a speculation. She doesn't have any fact. She doesn't have any evidence. She doesn't have any trends. She has no scientific correlation that meditation is going to get Obama elected or is going to keep a hurricane from coming. She has none of that. Those are all her fantasies in her
belief
of speculation.
It's the doctrine of the church.
And if she speculates that he's going to cause that and then uses that for murder...
Well, it is her belief, John.
Yeah, I mean, it is her belief.
You believe any religion on faith. Times.
Yeah, Van.
She's believing it on faith.
Yeah, we all agreed several times that she believed that. It's whether or not that's a reasonable belief. And is it a fantasy? Yeah, I do think it's a fantasy. Yeah.
But it's also not an individual belief. It's the belief of her entire community the TCS.
When you're around,
and we agreed to that, too.
You're influenced by the people that you are around the most.
Right. Yeah. We all agreed to that, too.
If they're all TCS people, you're probably going to be TCS person.
Multiply that by being in a cult.
No one else in TCS murdered anyone. That may be fair.
Nobody else in TCS was in a marriage with one of the highest ranking people in the church who was threatening to leave, which by implication is suggesting... the world ending.
Well, that person's not on trial.
The person
that is on trial is Lola Adams. Let's stay focused on her.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: jury, Rudy Sallow, Sherry Michaels, Mark Smeltzer, Kate Mullen Wallace, J.P. Stanley, and Jim Donnelly. Courtroom: Katerina Tana, Ramondo Isam, Cooper Hardin, Christine Solosi, Hannah Crowley, and Tony Yano. On Friday's jury break, we're speaking again to cult mediation specialist Patrick Ryan about the processes of deprogramming and exiting cults. See you then.